One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, and welcome to Everything is Fine, a podcast for women over 40. We are your hosts. I'm Kim France.
And I'm Jen Romolini.
And for a minute, you look like you were about to cry.
Oh, no, I wasn't about to. I just like, am I tired? Am I crying? Am I laughing? Am I whatever? I was, no, you're looking at the face of somebody who basically pulled an all-nighter making a zine as if I'm fucking 16 years old.
Tell me about the zine.
So we're going to have there's going to be a companion zine for my book that people can get like through, I don't know, some like giveaway or something. And like some people, like whatever, you could get a zine with my book, email me, DM me. But so I had to make a zine, and like, I made a lot of zines in the early 90s, like late 80s, early 90s. I made a lot of zines with a lot of letters from Sassy. Like I used a lot of Sassy stories. Like I knew how to make a zine. I start trying to make this zine, right? And or obviously it's like a nostalgia Gen X zine, blah, blah, blah. It's a companion, it has pictures in it. I was like, do I need a fucking engineering degree for this? How did I figure this out? When I was like, because, you know, you have to lay it out so that it's like opposite, like so that you can lay them all on top of each other and staple it. And I'm like collaging, but like collaging, like photocopying, like photocopying cassette tapes, like old Ani DeFranco and like cassette tapes. And like, I found all like concert stuff, like ticket stubs. Anyway, fucking not meant for an old person, a zine. Uh-huh. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I'm curious because whenever I've got to do anything that requires me to go into my boxes,
yes,
like my boxes of photos, my boxes of like, you know, ephemera, yes, like it fucks with my head.
Oh, it fucked with my head big time. It really did. And it was like 4 days of like collecting all the things to put in the zine. And it absolutely did fuck with my head. I did find, I guess I had like my checkbook on top of my desk at Lucky at one point, and you wrote a note on the check and you were like, why do you have your checkbook out? There was like a voided check, the first one, and you just wrote on that check. It's very funny. I found a couple of you and me things that were interesting. Like I found a note that you wrote me about that I was a good employee.
Did I really?
Yeah, I think it was like a Christmas card, but it was like a nice note, or maybe after I got a promotion.
Aw.
And I found your 40th birthday invite.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that party. My God.
Yes. It was like Kim turned 40 last year and she's finally ready to have a party.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. That party. I was in a mental hospital 2 weeks later.
Yes. I remember that party very well. I will never forget that party. There was a it was the weirdest party because it was at, I think we've talked about this before. It was at somebody's very high, and this is definitely in the book. It was at somebody's very high design apartment that was all white and black. And on the mantle, the only piece of art on the mantle was like this resin rat under glass. That was it. A black rat. And I was like, where the fuck are we? And then we got high.
because it was a friend of mine who lived across the street from me, and he threw the party for me or allowed us to use his home for the party.
Yes.
And at a certain point in the party, as happens every single time I have a party, I throw a party, I feel the need to escape my party.
Yes. 100%. Same. Yes.
So you and I and my friend Cynthia went across the street and smoked a doob and hung out. And then eventually made it back to the party. But that
and then
was
returned
like a highlight
to your party. Yes.
Yes. It was a highlight of the evening.
I remember the dress I was wearing. I wish I had a picture of it. It was such a good dress. It was like this weird metallic like wrap dress, but it had like really 70s colors. And it was a really, really good dress that for some reason Alex hated. So I wore it every time I wasn't with him. I totally remember that. That's so, so funny. What a time. We should say we have a really good guest on today. Jamie Attenberg is our guest today. She is, well, you'll find out. She is sort of like a writer's whisperer, I would say. And yeah. Anybody who's feeling creatively stuck, I think her work is amazing to read. Her newsletter, Craft Talk, is really good. So anyway, what else is happening to you this week?
What else is happening to me this week? I mean, I can always talk about the weather. Which has been, it's like summer here now.
Incredible. Incredible.
Maybe going to Philly at the end of the week.
Okay. All right.
Which could be exciting, but it's a pretty quiet week. How about you?
Oh, it's, you know, I'm gearing up for what this month is going to be, which is, you know, a real push of the book. And this is it. This is it. This is the final push of this, you know, 3-year long project. And it's funny. I'm feeling a lot of grief about it. I'm grieving it. I'm grieving the process of writing it. I'm grieving it being mine and mine alone. I went for a walk with my friend Catherine on Friday night, and she was talking about a new project she's working on that she's like very excited about, and I just like I was like very supportive of her, but then all of a sudden I just like burst into tears and I was like, I miss my book.
Like, I understand that.
So weird. It's such a what a weird life it is to just like always be wanting to live in like an imaginary future or an imaginary past, and instead of just being like, I'm here, and that's what I'm trying to do. So how am I doing this week? I'm trying to be very present in the moment instead of living in the future or the past.
I know, very good idea, and not so easy all the time.
No, not so easy. Not so easy at all. I am doing a, because people have asked me, you know, whatever. Sometimes people DM me like, how do you write a book and have a life and whatever. So I am doing a series on my Substack about how I wrote this book. Sort of like a quick and dirty, like, this is how I got an agent when no agents wanted me. This is how we published the book when 50 people said no, you know, et cetera.
I actually, because you're the agent for your first book, this doesn't give anything away. Your agent for your first book declined to be your agent for your second book. And yes. I cannot wait until your book is a big fucking deal and that agent has to like watch it.
You know, I feel no vengeance. It was the wrong fit. Like, everybody in our life, every single relationship we have, like, not everything's going to have the right chemistry. And like, you figure that out more and more as you get older. Like, he and I were just, and he's like a top agent, but he and I were just not the right fit. And it was very much like a regression at all times for me, because he was like this hot guy that made me feel like a weird girl. So it was like, I was always stuck in that old pattern that I felt like all my whole life, like with guys like that, like that I would like say something and he'd be like, okay. And I was like, oh, I don't want to be in this pattern anymore with somebody who makes me feel like a freak, even though he's not trying to, he's just a conventional person, you know?
Yeah. No, I get that.
So, you know, I have no vengeance. And everything worked out really well. And I love my agent now, but it is a thing where there was a lot of sneaky ageism in this second selling of this second book. That now that I look back on it, I'm like, oh, I was kind of like, people were starting to look at me like I was like out of the game, like I was past my prime, you know, and like, fuck it. I said no. So
good on you.
Good on everybody. Everybody's fine. But listen to this. Jamie Attenberg is really, really inspiring. I think her life is inspiring. I think, God, her output is inspiring. So hopefully everybody gets something out of this.
Excellent.
All right, let's get into it. Our guest today is Jamie Attenberg. Jamie is a New York Times bestselling author of 7 books of fiction, including The Middlesteins and All Grown Up, the memoir I Came All This Way to Meet You, and most recently, the bestselling writing guide 1,000 Words. Jamie is also the founder of the annual 1,000 Words of Summer Project and maintains the popular Craft Talk newsletter year-round. This September, Jamie's new novel, A Reason to See You Again, will be released. Welcome, Jamie.
Hi.
All right, Jamie. So clearly, just reading that, you're busy. You're really prolific. I can't believe you even have time to talk to us. This is a million books. This is crazy. What is your writing practice like? Do you write every single day?
I mean, I think about writing every day. I think about what I'm working on. Do you know what I mean? If I'm not actually doing it, I think about it in the morning when I wake up. My back has sort of gotten worse as I've gotten older. Like sitting at a desk for extended periods of time is not available to me anymore. And I mean, I used to sit all day long and it was great and it was so much fun. So I'm a little bit more efficient now, I think. Like in a way, I work less, but I work harder. So I think about things more in advance. And so then when I sit down and actually write, I'm not that at the desk for that long, simply for physical reasons. Like my back just isn't going to allow me to do it. But I feel like I know what I'm doing. You know, like that's why I get to write a book about how to be more creative and productive and lead a creative life and things like that, because I've thought about it for a really long time. I've been doing this for, you know, 2 decades. So,
yeah.
When did you give yourself permission to be a writer? I read that you had a kind of cushy corporate executive job and you left it one day and said, it's time to write.
I mean, I don't know how cushy it was. I worked really hard at it. I worked for HBO in the like late 90s, early aughts. And I was like a producer of web content for The Sopranos and Six Feet Under.
Wow.
Which was actually like a great job, but also I worked like 70 hours a week. So yeah. It definitely didn't feel cushy, but it was like I made money off of it and I could have stayed, and they didn't back then. It was like very mysterious, the internet and television was king. And so, you know, so I kind of snuck in and I got to do some really cool things. That maybe was the cushy part, was just being able to do interesting work. But when you work on someone else's, you know, content, show, vision, brand, whatever, you're in service to what they're doing. I feel like you all know this already, I'm guessing, from what I know about you two.
Yeah.
And so I just thought, what if I never know what it's like to work on my own stuff and figure out what my own voice was? So I learned a lot from doing that, from being exposed to these people who were the best at what they did creatively. But then I thought, let me just try and see if I can do it on my own. And I had been doing, you know, essays and writing short stories and freelancing probably for a couple years before that. But I would say around, you know, 2002, you know, 20 years ago is when I really went out on my own.
Yeah.
For better or for worse, because it was really a struggle for a long time.
Let's talk about 1,000 Words of Summer, because one of the reasons I really wanted to have you on was because I know a lot of our listeners are wanting to write. They think they have an idea. You know, we're all in midlife. It's like, I want to write that book before I die, right? And I feel like 1,000 Words of Summer is such an incredible prompt. And I feel like it really helped me. And I bet it helps, would help a lot of people. So let's talk about it. Can you explain to people what it is and why you started it? Listeners who might not know.
Sure. And thanks for saying nice things about it. I appreciate that. I like it when people like it. It's definitely like my pet project that's become something more than just that. So I started it in 2018, and I, with a friend of mine who wanted to get started on her book proposal that she was writing, and I was trying to finish up a novel, and both of us kind of needed like a little kick in the pants to get going. And so, and she's a teacher, so really summertime was her time to write. And so we decided we were going to write 1,000 words a day together for 2 weeks straight and see what could come out of that. I mean, 14,000 words is a lot of words. It's something that can kind of shift what you're doing, shift your project. Mm-hmm. So I tweeted about it because I'm a pretty online person. And then all these people said, I want to do it too. And I was like, all right, I'll just set up a little newsletter and people can sign up for it. And then I'll send out little encouraging notes. I don't know. It was just an experiment. And yeah. Then 200 people signed up the first day. And then by the end of the first year, it was 2,000 people.
Wow.
Which was like a lot for, you know, 2 weeks of growth of like this imaginary thing, you know?
Yes. Yes.
But I just was like, I don't know. Are we going to do this? And then part of the project is that I asked other writers that I knew to write encouraging letters that I would send out. And then also we had this hashtag that we came up with, 1,000 words of summer. And so people would go online at the end of their writing day and they would say how their writing day had gone, and then they would use the hashtag, and then people would check in with each other and kind of cheer each other on. And this nice little community formed out of it. In 2018, Twitter was still kind of Twitter. I mean, it had been a volatile time, you know, starting, you know, around 2015, 2016 on in that space, but we still wanted to find each other, you know?
Yeah.
So there's sort of, okay. So there's sort of two ways of looking at not being able to write. Like there's the internal stuff, meaning the tricks that we play on ourselves. And then there's this external stuff where there are things that are outside of your control. And so I think internally people worry a lot about what their families will think. And they worry about either writing memoiristic stuff or autobiographical stuff. And they're, you know, they just get concerned that their mother will read it. Should they change their name? And then they just end up never writing it in the first place. And then the other thing I would say is people want it to be perfect. They're perfectionists in all ways, and they expect every sentence to be perfect as they lay it down on the page, which is, you know, if you've ever written anything long form, in particular, you know that it's going to be a mess for a long time. It's a lot of, you know, it's a lot of words, or even short form, it'll be a mess. And it goes through many stages in an editing process. So I think that those, you know, people just say, if it can't be this way, or if I'm worried about what mom's going to say, then they just don't write. And so then the other thing is there are these external things, like you have a job, like you have children that take up a lot of time as they do, or you're caregiving for someone. And those things can get in your way. And it's very hard, I know, very challenging for people to carve out time around it. But I did this like really great interview with NPR at the beginning of the year with Isaac Fitzgerald and Disha Filia. And mm-hmm. Disha had 4 kids while she was writing her first book, and which ended up being a huge hit. And she was talking about in that interview about how sometimes you have to be willing to disappoint people.
Hmm.
And so sometimes you just have to say, I'm not going to go to that school play, or you can get a ride with somebody else, or whatever, you know, whatever those things might be in terms of parenting. I'm not a parent, so I don't know.
Right.
But I'm just guessing based on conversations with friends. Yeah, I think that can be really challenging. These, you know, where you have a full-time job, like how are you fitting things in? So these are all things that make it, I have a life where I, you know, I've carved it out. I've specifically prioritized becoming a writer and pushing a lot of things out of the way so that I can just focus on that. And I know for a lot of people, it's just something that they have to fit in. So, you know, hopefully the book and the project really encourage you to take yourself and your time seriously and understand why having a relationship with your creative self is really important. I always end up sounding very self-helpy when I talk about it, but maybe that's okay.
I think that's okay. I think that that's right. I mean, I think people need that kind of encouragement, especially the idea that your story is important. You know, I think that you can really get bogged. Oh, well, you know, maybe I shouldn't do this. There's so many books in the world. There's, you know, there's so many ways to like psych yourself out, I feel like.
Also, like, I don't even know if it's about writing a book. like as time has gone on, the project has evolved for me. So that first year, it was really about cracking the whip, and I was much more of a task mistress, I have to say. I was a lot tougher because I knew who the 200, those first 200 people, I knew who they were. Like, right. I knew they were all people who were like, had deadlines and, you know, or like really strict goals in mind. And as time has gone on and we've had more people join it, I have a more general sense that there are just some people who really are just curious about it, or who really just want to write, you know, the motivation to write in their journal every day, or explore things, explore ideas. And I've learned over time that it's not just about getting that book deal. It's really about the like magic of writing for people, because it helps you to communicate with the world. It helps you to communicate with yourself, helps you to like figure out how you feel about stuff that's going on in the world. So I have definitely toned it down a little bit, but it's become more inviting probably to, you know, a bigger audience. And I really believe that like if everybody was sitting down writing in their journal every day, the world would probably be a better place.
There's something about the fact that it's 1,000 words. There's something about the fact that it's this brief amount of time that I'm just trying to figure out like why it took off the way it did. And I think a big part of it is all the stuff that you added to it and all the writers and things. But why do you think it hit the way it did?
I don't know. Well, it's free, which I think is helpful. It's really low maintenance in your inbox, right? I didn't try to like do it year round. I only did it once a year, mm-hmm. right? I think that it's very intimate, like you're getting letters from me directly and I'm writing alongside you. And I think that there's a sense that of you're not alone and mm-hmm. that they're, you know, so I think early on it was like, you could actually just go online and put in this hashtag and you just felt like you were with, you know, aligned with a group of people and felt really supported. So I think that was helpful. I don't know. I think it's really, you know, I'm not the first person to like invent a writing challenge. I know that there are other things out there that exist. I was not a writing challenge kind of person, I would say.
Right.
So I may be coming at it from a different tone or angle that I can't explain to you because I'm too close to it. I think it's having the other writers contribute letters too, but it's a short period of time. It's 2 weeks. There is something about the time frame of it. There is something about the number part of it. And I'll just say one other thing that has evolved over time is that it isn't even really about 1,000 words anymore. I mean, I think it's about doing 1,000 words, but I've learned that for some people, like they're only going to get 250 words, but that's okay. That's a hard, you know, that's a good day's work.
Yeah, no, that's the message that I really like is that, you know, people feel like writers feel like they've, you know, or when you come to writing, feel like, okay, if this is my job, I need to do it 8 hours a day. And that's just not tenable for anyone.
Right. Or if you're a poet, because I have a lot of, you know, we have poets or screenwriters or science writers or, you know, who have a lot of research they have to do. So the metaphor has evolved over time to it just being, you know, to people thinking of it as a good day's work, which is probably really helpful and less stressful. People do get stressed out about it and I don't want them to, but I do like it. I do want people to challenge themselves. It's not easy to do it every, you know, but if you can make it a week, you can make it 2 weeks. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You see, I see the drop off.
I mean, I could write 1,000 words a day. That's not the problem. It's just they wouldn't be in the right order at all.
That's okay, because it's about generating a big pile of words and then going back and looking at what you have.
Right.
It's supposed to be a mess. I think that there's something interesting that comes out of the mess.
Yeah, no, that's always my advice to people when they can't write, to just sit down and spew. But God, it's so painful to look at that sometimes.
It's true. I'm personally looking at my own personal mess right now of like 15,000 words that I've done on this novel that I'm working on. And it's going real slow. But I, you know, it's work. It's okay. It's not supposed to be, not to sound like someone's grandfather, but it's not supposed to be easy.
No, right. That's what the money's for. I mean, such as it is, but yeah. Let's take a quick break from some ads.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
And we're back. I love how prolific you are. I feel like I can turn out a book every like 7 years, you know. Where do you get inspiration from? How do you keep being so generative?
Well, I definitely think about places a lot, which I think is helpful. I live in New Orleans, and I've only written one book set in New Orleans, and I've lived here for 8 years. So I do think about where I live and the space around me. And so if you live, I think anywhere is interesting, to be really honest with you, but I live in an exceptionally interesting place. So I think that that's part of it. Like putting myself into the world and in different spaces and places, and like, that's helpful to me to, if you go to a museum or you go to a hair salon, it's like the same level of inspiration to me. And I don't know. I read a lot. I go for walks. I'm grateful that I get to do this. So I don't really, I'm not fussy about what my entry points are. I'm always just paying attention, taking notes, being curious. So I don't really live. Do you think the world is interesting and inspiring?
Of course. No, I absolutely do. And I think something about your newsletter, Craft Talk, and you were saying that you feel self-helpy, but I think there's something that's almost like spiritual about it. And like, because writing is somewhat magic to a degree, in that, like I said this last week on the podcast, the thing you write today, you probably wouldn't write tomorrow. It's kind of like a snapshot of time, right? And I think that it is processing your life, and it is processing experiences and the time you're living in. So I love that you treat it with that kind of seriousness. And I think there is something, like today you had something about, there was a writer, I forget who it was, I'm sorry, but you had a newsletter today that talked about showing up and how this writer is really showing up for their work, and he showed up for the writing itself, but every part of it. And I think that it is, I don't know, I really like your approach to writing and creativity a lot. And maybe I guess the question is, talk about that.
I like writing that newsletter, because it's short and I can say something, put something good out into the world, like a good vibe out into the world. My approach is really to try to be really emotionally present for myself when I'm in the creative process. I have been doing this for such a long time, so I don't know. I feel very like tuned into it, but I find that even when I can't write, I make myself write something in my journal, and I always find my way to the thing. So I think I really do think it's about being like regularly showing up for yourself and regularly showing up on the page. I think that that's part of it. And I guess that requires discipline. So I'm pretty disciplined. It is how I make my living. So I kind of have to do it too. Like I put myself into this corner. It's not a bad corner to be in, but I have to keep writing books until I die, probably.
Right.
I mean, I don't think of it as I have to, but I get to, but it's how I make my living. Right. So, and I don't want to work in academia. That doesn't seem interesting to me. Mostly because I have a lot of friends who work in academia and it sounds like it's a lot of politics.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not like the movies. It really seems like it's hell. Yeah.
Politics with really low stakes too.
Yeah. Although with all the protests, it's really high stakes right now.
Yeah.
And so, I'm so proud of all the people protesting. I don't know. I just don't think I've tried so many things and this is the stuff that I like the best. And so I fight for it. I want to make sure that you understand that it's really hard and it does really require a lot of discipline to do it, but I also really love it more than anything else that I've tried. I've had a million jobs and this is the one. I mean, I'm also like, if I had to go back into an office, I'd be so screwed. Like I have not been in an office in like, you know, except for like, a, you know, doctor's office or something like that in like years and years and years. So sometimes I, you know, feel like, oh, I should go take a job just to see what it's like. But then when I talk to my friends who have like office jobs, I'm like, oh, it's kind of the same. It's just new technology.
Yeah. Well, office jobs have really changed. I mean, I currently weirdly have a full-time job and they've changed a lot because you just have no context for people anymore. Like everybody lives in a different place. You only come together on a screen, you know, once or twice a week. Everything is on, you know, Slack or some whatever your company's using. So it is really a sanitized working experience. And it is, you do have to be sort of self-motivated. There's a lot more autonomy. But it's odd. It's weird out there. I hear you. It was weird. Yeah.
I did not this past summer, but the summer before I worked part-time in a restaurant, like a breakfast spot donut shop. I basically was the donut counter girl all summer.
Wow.
And it's mostly like a really nice clientele, but occasionally you get some people and I like remember being done with the day and just thinking, I hope they don't give me a bad Yelp review, you know, because I just didn't want make it look bad for the restaurant, you know?
Yeah.
I wanted them to succeed. So I did really enjoy that experience. Everyone kept thinking I was the owner cause I'm so old, but nobody, you know, I was very happy to do it. And it was like, I don't know. I think most of the people that I know in New Orleans are either writers or they work in the service industry because that is the folk that is like the main business of this town is service industry stuff, restaurants and bars and tourism.
Yeah.
So I have an understanding of what their work life is like.
Yeah. But speaking of getting older, you wrote this essay a few years ago. It was really inspiring about finally wearing a bikini at 47 and reclaiming your body. There was even a picture attached. What did that feel like? Why did you want to do that?
Oh my gosh, I forgot about that. And I was just thinking, do I still have a bikini? I have to make sure I still have a bikini. Mm-hmm. Anymore. And I do. I got one last year. I just remembered. I guess I didn't really think when I wrote it that they were going to ask me for the picture.
Right.
But it was on my Instagram. So I think they even just went and took it. I can't remember, you know?
Yeah.
And, but it was fine. I don't know. It's fine to, you know, be a middle-aged lady in a bathing suit. And I think it was like somewhere. Oh, also it was like for the Times of London, their magazine. I used to write pretty regularly for them. And so I was like, it's in England. Who cares? You know?
Right.
It's very funny because just last week we were talking about swimsuits because a listener had a question about them. And I informed Jen that my solution to the fact that I can't find a swimsuit I look good in is just to never go in the water anymore.
And I said no. That was not a solution. Exactly. No.
Oh, I know. I'm rethinking it.
I think it's, I also, again, I live in a city that is going to be, it's like so hot here in the summertime. Mm-hmm. That we basically all are just like strategizing how to be as like naked as possible without being naked, you know, like walking around outside because it's just so humid and disgusting for months and months at a time. So you kind of got to get over it here. I don't know. Am I going to care when I'm like really old and wrinkled, maybe, or I don't, there's so many other people out there who are just hanging out. So
I want to ask you about moving to New Orleans and leaving New York. What was that like?
Well, I really love it here. It is a complicated city. I love that I own my own little house. I love my friends. I love my community. I love the vibes here. It definitely is a city with its challenges, but I knew that before I moved here. I miss the people in New York a lot. And, you know, I go and visit a couple times a year and always have a really lovely time and go visit, you know, cute bookstores in Brooklyn, things like that, and do readings. And it feels wonderful and exhilarating to be there. And I feel like a version of myself, a different version of myself, definitely in New York. But this is my home base. I'm always happy to come home here. I don't know. I guess I blew up my life a little bit when I moved down here, but it worked out in the end.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you find that it's it's, I imagine it's a slightly slower pace than New York was.
Yeah. I don't think I could go back to living in New York. Actually, I just met with this woman the other day who was interested in, you know, how I had adjusted to it. And she was sort of feeling like maybe she had made a mistake or she wanted to move back to New York. And I was like, you know what? I dare you. I was like, you have lived down here in a much more spacious existence and you moved down here for a reason. And if you think moving back to New York and moving into, you know, the back into the life that you had, like, I think you've outgrown it. You know, you can move back and forth, obviously, between New York and New Orleans, but she's about my age. And, there was a reason why she came down here and she had, you know, it was clear that she loved it, but just that it didn't solve all your problems, but nowhere solves all your problems. No place is perfect. No job is perfect. You know, no spouse is perfect. And so you have to kind of just figure out what's most important for you. And for me, you know, I love living a slower pace. I'm always really moving pretty speedy. Yeah. So it doesn't, you know, it's nice to slow down a little bit.
Mm-hmm. It seems to me, I think you're in your 50s now, and it seems to me like you've really designed a life for yourself that is not necessarily a conventional life, but it seems like one that is really well designed to suit your needs, that is really emotionally present. Were you very intentional about designing your life? I know the move to New Orleans and the rest of it, but were you very intentional about this is what I want in this period of my life and this is how I'm going to go about getting it?
I will tell you that I had been looking for a while for where I was going to live in my 50s because I knew it wasn't going to be New York because I sell books, but I'm not some massive bestseller.
Right.
And I'm not going to get, you know, my publisher isn't giving me $1 million a book or anything like that. Like I make a you know, middle-class creative person kind of life for myself, living for myself. But it wasn't going to change. There wasn't anything I could do to change it. I couldn't work any harder. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I 100% do. Yes, absolutely. Yes.
And so I was like, am I working this hard to not like be happy in New York? And whereas I couldn't work this hard and be like, have a better quality of life somewhere else. And I knew that it was true. And then I happened to fall in love with New Orleans, but I had tried a bunch of other cities. Like I would go and stay somewhere for 3 months at a time to see if that was the place for me. Hmm. And then New Orleans seemed to make the most sense for me and for a lot of reasons. So I knew I didn't want to be there because New York is a really great place to be if you're really young and it doesn't matter how much money you make, or if you want to be, if you're older and you make money and have lots of money. But I was not going to be either of those things. And I was starting to feel it in my 40s, but you could still have a pretty good time. You can have a good time whenever in New York. But I just knew that I wanted something else for my 50s. I wanted a gentler landing for myself. I was intrigued by the idea of becoming a homeowner. It certainly was never going to happen in New York, and it was possible here. I have a very small house here, but it's something that I earned and paid for through my creative living. So that is a big deal to me. I was very proud of myself for that.
Yeah. Was it scary making that kind of change in your 50s, late 40s?
No, I don't know why it wasn't scary to me. I mean, I was, thoughtful about it. Like I came down, you know, several years in a row for 3 months at a time. So I knew what I was getting. It wasn't like I moved here and I'd never been here before. Like I had friends here. I had an understanding of what the city was. No, I don't scare easily. Maybe that's part of it.
So you like change?
I think I like change. It's good for me emotionally. It's good for me creatively. I probably maybe get bored easily. I have lived all over before this and traveled quite a bit. So it made sense. I also travel a lot for work. I moved down here before the pandemic. And so my life was different that I was on the road at least 3 months a year.
Right.
So I was still, it still sort of felt the same, except I had a different home base in a way. And then when the pandemic happened, we were all staying closer to home, obviously. And only now am I starting to feel like, oh, it's back to the way it was before, where I'm on tour, I'm doing speaking events, I'm traveling more and being out more in the world. But yeah, I guess it's a different kind of lifestyle than a lot of people lead.
No, I mean, I don't think it's like so bizarre or anything. I think actually it's very beautiful, it seems to me. I just, I think a lot of women are afraid to live it. Mm-hmm. And I think that I don't necessarily think it takes courage. It just takes sort of vision for your life.
Yeah.
And yeah. I think that from what I know about you, you have that vision of your life. And this is, you know, kind of what you wanted. And your answer just bore that out for me. And I think that women are afraid to say, I'm going to do this on my own. Many women, not all. I'm going to do this on my own. I'm going to write this book. I'm going to be in this community. I'm going to go after this goal, etc. And I think that it's inspiring when somebody does it.
I mean, that's really nice of you to say. I feel like I know my day-to-day existence, which is so quiet.
Yeah.
Like most of the time, like it's just walking the dog and then writing and reading and thinking and drinking coffee, you know, and maybe going to the gym or something. And then I do get to travel, and that's really nice. But it just feels like really normal and quiet, especially as you get older. Like I'm not going out to the bars. Do you know what I'm saying?
No, that is a real change, right? I mean, that was a real shift in like the last 15 years. It's like, oh no, I'm not doing that anymore. That doesn't feel right.
I know. I will say this, and this woman that I was talking to the other day was a lovely person. I'm not, certainly not criticizing her at all, but she asked me about, you know, how I felt about things. And I was like, you know, you have a job you can do from anywhere. She had something she could do online. I was like, you have some money in the bank. Like you're not a millionaire, but you know, you have some money in the bank. You were able to move once. So clearly you have some money to throw around a little bit. I was like, you're not married. You don't have children. Like, what are you doing? You should be seeing the world and you should be going out there and doing absolutely everything that you want to be doing that you can afford to do and still, you know, be reasonable. There should be nothing that's like, you know, and you're a healthy person. Like now is the time. It feels like to me, like 50s feels like, I was a little worried about my 50s. I'm not going to lie, but I'm like, oh, I'm still me, you know, and I know more, you know, and I know how to assert myself in the world. And I know people because I've been alive on this planet for a while. And I think it's like healthy to view yourself as a citizen of the world.
Yeah. I think your 50s can be great. I think my 50s were a great decade.
Yeah.
Yeah. So far, so good. If physically, I wish I was a little, you know, my back is killing me.
Yeah.
And I just went on hormones like last year. So and that was like leading up to, you know, between peri and menopause, like I was like, I wasn't sure what was going on, you know? And, so that's been new and something to contend with, but otherwise, you know, so far so good. Spend more money on getting my hair done. That's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Jamie, what do you still want to do in your life? What do you still want to do? I mean, you have so many books, right? So I wonder what success looks like for you now. And also what you still want to do creatively, anything.
Gosh, I was just talking to my friend, Tim Shafford, about this. He's a really wonderful novelist. He just wrote this book called Titanic Survivors Book Club. That's doing really well. It's a wonderful historical fiction novel set in Paris. It's really lovely. And he was happy that his book was doing well. And I was like, you couldn't be able to sell another one. Like when your books sell well, then you like, all it does, it's like an addiction. It's like, all we want to do is keep writing the next one.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Yes, we always just want our books to do well enough that we can keep going. Mm-hmm. And for lifers, you know, for me, like my 10th book is coming out this fall, a novel. So I'm in it, you know, and I want to keep doing it because I really, it's so joyful to me. I do really love, it is hard work, but I do really love writing so much. Like it's so pleasurable to me. So I guess I want to keep writing. I'd like to take a little more time off. I think at the end of the year, I'm going to take a month off because having the 1,000 words book came out in January and this novel comes out in September. Oof. So last year I wrote 2 books and this year I'm publishing 2 books.
Yeah, which is a full-time job, which is its own weird full-time job, publishing a book.
Yeah. And then I got to like write, you know, some of the next book. So I'm going to take time off for like a month. I'm going to go down to Mexico, I think, with my little dog.
Aww.
Mess around in Mexico. I don't know. I feel like my big plans are like make sure that I get another 2-book deal so I can, you know, it's job security for, you know, 4 years, travel. I don't know. Isn't that weird? I don't really have a big goal. I don't have like a, I want to win the Pulitzer Prize.
Right.
Like
right,
that is not a thing you can actually control.
Right.
And just keep going, keep surviving.
Yeah. Keep surviving the world we live in.
Yeah. It's like really, and be like, you know, I love growing the community and I love being supportive. I love also like the, you know, 1,000 words is also like a fundraiser. So we raise money for all the contributing writers get to pick a charity to donate to. And then also like last year was the first year we did this, but we're sponsoring Scholastic Book Fairs for schools here, which is really incredible. So I think that's like a good goal is to be able to continue to like the charitable and efforts and acts of service in my life.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. This has been so great. And I know it's going to inspire a lot of people. And tell everybody, when does 1,000 words start up again? 1,000 words of summer start up again?
Well, first, let me just say thank you so much for having me and letting me just ramble. I really appreciate it.
You're the best. It's great.
Very sweet. And saying nice things to me. So 1,000 words of summer starts June 1st this year. And it'll last obviously for 2 weeks. And we're doing a really big launch with the New York Public Library this year.
Oh, cool.
So there's an in-person event that I think is already sold out. But there will be a Zoom component to it as well, so that we're all going to write together at the same time on June 1st. So details on the website, but I hope everyone can join in if they're interested. You know, it's kind of low stakes. No one's going to look over your shoulder, but if you want someone to, they're there for you.
I totally agree. And thank you. Thank you so much, Jamie. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, you guys.
Thanks for listening to Everything Is Fine. We're your hosts. I'm Jen Romolini.
And I'm Kim France.
If you like the show, please rate and review it on all the platforms, especially Apple Podcasts. It really helps the show find new listeners. It really makes a difference. If you want to support the production of the show and help us pay our editor, you can join our Patreon at patreon.com/everythingisfine. You can find Kim on her Substack, kimfrance.substack.com. And you should. She's doing amazing things there every single day, which is crazy to me still. You can find me somewhat more sporadically on my Substack, jenromolini.substack.com. We are on social media at EAF Podcast on Instagram. We have a robust and private Facebook group, and the show is mixed and edited by the wonderful Natalie Rivera. This week, she had to deal with many, many glitches and dogs barking. Thank you as always, Natalie, and we will be back next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.